We do have a quorum for our program review committee. So if you would kindly call the roll, let us begin.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I will do roll call. Chairperson Duncan Hall?
Present.
Vice Chair Apostolo?
I think she's with us by phone.
Commissioner Apostolo? Are you unmuted?
She is unmuted. Mary, maybe you hit the mute on your phone.
Okay. We'll circle back. Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Great. Vice Chair Apostolo?
All right, why don't we mark Mary as a tentative present, and we will try to get her on board later during the meeting. And so let us go ahead and begin. I want to welcome everyone to our meeting today at the Program Review Committee. And we have at this time just one item to act upon, and that is approval of our minutes from the January 21st Program Review Committee. Given the fact that I don't know if I'm going to have a verbal second. I think I have a verbal first.
Second.
Oh, I have a second?
You have a second, Tara.
Okay. Very good. So all those in favor of approving the minutes of January 21st, please signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Minutes are approved. So let us move forward to the action, not the action, but the discussion for today. And I don't know who is going to lead that discussion, but I know I am very much in favor of hearing the discussion, because this is something that we are very excited about. And we think, of course, this is a very necessary action for us to be taking as a board. So, Leilani, is this going to be you, Barbara? Who's going to be leading us today?
Andrew, are you ready for me to share my screen? And then I'll hand it over to Sylvia first to do a quick introduction.
Leilani?
Yep. Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I believe Pilar would have provided the introduction, but looks like she may be detained, so I will go ahead and do that on her behalf. First of all, I do want to welcome several visitors, several guests that we have with us today, and would ask that they each introduce themselves briefly. So I'm going to do it based on my little camera here, and so I'm going to ask Cami Warren to go ahead and introduce yourself briefly.
Sylvia, good morning, everyone. My name is Cami Warren, and I work with Communities and Schools of Central Texas, and I am lucky enough to run the Smart Kids program that we've been partnering with you on for about 20 years now.
Thank you, Cami. And Ben Kramer. Ben, would you like to do a quick introduction?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ben Kramer, Vice President of Education for Austin PBS. And we, too, have worked with HACA over many years in summer and year-round programs.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Shannon, I can't quite see your full last name, so apologies. If you can do a quick introduction.
Hi, everybody. I'm Shannon Sandrea. I'm a senior program director with Communities and Schools, and I started in the last fall, and I am supervising Cami. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Shannon. Hi, Priscilla Cortez, if you can do a quick introduction.
Yes, ma'am. Priscilla Cortez. I work with Dr. Ben Kramer at Austin PBS. Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you for being with us. And I think I've gotten all of the guests that are here with us today. At this time, yes, Leilani and Barbara will be providing a brief overview, and we will also be hearing from, I believe, CIS on a little bit more of a deeper dive in terms of some proposed summer youth programs for Hakka youth. Again, this is in an effort to combat the COVID educational slide that so many youth have been battling since last year with the impending pandemic. And the board has graciously approved funding to assist with getting some of these very critical summer youth programs off the ground. And so at this time, I'm going to have Leilani go ahead and provide an overview, and we will be learning more. Of course, there will be opportunity for Q&A by our committee members. So Leilani, take it away.
Yes, thank you, Sylvia. Good afternoon, everyone, our guests, commissioners. And I'd just like to share with you all, this is a proposed summer youth programming that we're bringing to the board, so you all have an idea of the vision and the mission and the purpose of the programs that we will be offering across all of our 18 public housing properties. Again, it was $250,000, and so Barbara, Pilar, and I and others have really looked into several programs citywide. I would like to share that the programs that we have chosen, and I call it comprehensive, because although we define COVID-19 academic slide maybe just for seniors in high school, because of the pandemic, we want to make sure that you all realize that the pandemic affected all grades, from preschool all the way to high school. So for the first time bringing to the board, this is going to be a bigger menu of options of what summer programs we have chosen. And these are all proposed at this time. No contracts have been signed. And so we would welcome your input, if any feedback about the programs that we're proposing today. So with that being said, I would like to introduce Communities and Schools. They have prepared a PowerPoint presentation about their Smart Kids Summer Bridge program. The properties that they will be serving during the summer are Booker T. Washington, Golden Oak, Memphis, Santa Rita, which also includes Chalmers, Rosewood, and up to 60 youth. And the cost for this program proposed is $48,720. So with that, I'm going to transition to the slide and hand it over to Ms. Cami Warren to start her presentation.
Thank you, Leilani. All right. Good morning again, everyone. So, yes, as Leilani had mentioned, right, we really wanted to focus on this academic slide that a lot of our students have felt and experienced this last 15 months through the COVID pandemic, but not just the academic slide and grades, right? We really wanted to help students re-engage in school, re-engage in attending school and doing work and logging into classes, things like that. That was really what we have seen these past 15 months, as students really feeling just disengaged from classroom, from teachers, from other students. And so you'll see through the presentation here, that's really what we're focusing on, is not only working on these academic skills with them, but also just kind of trying to create a growth mindset, re-engage them in this, you know, philosophy of going to school and graduating and working through their issues, right, with school. Thanks, Leilani. So this is a brief kind of Summer Bridge timeline. So what we're calling it is the Smart Kids Summer Bridge program, really trying to bridge, right, students from the end of this academic year into next year. So we're going to be focusing on things like getting students, making sure they're enrolled in class, registered for school next fall, ensuring that they have someone within CIS to meet with consistently. They'll be working, these bridge caseworkers will be working with students individually in small groups, as well as doing family check-ins and work throughout the summer. So you'll see in June, we're really going to be focusing on the SB there, is our Summer Bridge staff. With our Smart Kids Coordinator staff, they're going to be transitioning students from one person to another. So they're going to be doing that warm handoff. They'll be doing in-person meetings with them to ensure that students and families are comfortable with this new Summer Bridge caseworker that we will hire. And then they're going to be doing what we're calling a pre-evaluation, like a pre-test. to really be able to gauge the, you know, success of the program this summer. And so we'll be doing pretests in June, and then there's that post-evaluation in August. So that's what those pieces are. We're going to be working on social-emotional check-ins per always in the Smart Kids program, community engagement as well, and identifying kind of small group activities for students to do with these Summer Bridge caseworkers on site. Similarly to our Smart Kids program, right, but not as intensive. These are going to be smaller groups. We're still working our way out of COVID and trying to do that really in a social distance safe way, but really focusing on academics with these students in a fun, engaging way. In July, we're going to be moving fully into the Summer Bridge program. Most of our Smart Kids staff and CIS through the year staff will be off on summer break in July. And so then we're going to be moving into just Summer Bridge caseworkers, working with these students and families. So you're going to be seeing weekly check-ins, working with students on this type of growth mindset. We have activities we're training our Summer Bridge staff to use, which we'll go into in a minute. And we're also going to be continuing our weekly food and snack deliveries. So this is something we do throughout the year for all of our HACA students and families. Anyone who says, you know what, we could really use some additional food this week, we go out and deliver both full created meals as well as snacks, kind of healthy snacks for Meals on Wheels. So we'll be continuing to do that as well as the basic needs, resource procurement. So we do a lot of that at CIS, as most of you know. We're keen to get students and families exactly what they need throughout the summer. That's going to include school supplies. So every one of our students in the Summer Bridge program will get extra school supplies to ensure they have everything they need moving into August. And then moving into August, on the timeline, we have the post-evals to try to make sure that we're really doing a successful job for these students and families in the Summer Bridge program. End of summer awards and working to really transition students and families back to their Smart Kids coordinator that they'll work with moving August through the end of the school year. So that's kind of really the basis of the program and the timeline. Ilani, if you want to go to the next slide, thank you. This is really what we're going to focus on. So I'm going to be sure to break it down for you all. So you can see our little pyramid. We have really focusing on cultivating this growth mindset. This is something we really saw folks struggle with, students and adults alike, right? Really struggling getting staying in the moment, staying engaged in their work. We really, really want to focus on that with these particular students. We are targeting our Smart Kids and HACA students and families who really need extra assistance in this way. We will be also targeting and focusing on lessening that academic slide, right? So any of those on-site activities we're doing with students, they're going to be focused. Maybe STEM activities, something that is fun and engaging, but will get them really focusing back into this academic. We will also be working with what is called the Khan Academy. I don't know if any of you know this. I actually worked with this a little bit with my son throughout COVID. And so Khan Academy has what they call growth mindset activities. And I'll go into this a little bit in a couple slides from now. But they work on developing growth mindset, right? So it's working on things like, I didn't get this. I don't understand it. And being able to really have that self-efficacy to work through the problem and figuring out different ways to ask for help. Okay, so that's one of those pieces. Small group academic enrichment activities, consistent meetings with students and families, as you all know, we do generally within Smart Kids throughout the year. This enables us to continue doing that with these 60-ish students throughout the entire summer, which is not something we're usually able to do. Ensuring students and families have learning resources at home, devices, you know, desks set up, things like that, all of the school supplies, ensuring every student is registered for school in August, every one of our HACA families. And we'll also have an incentive program. As you know, a lot of students might not want to be doing some academic work in the summer, and although we will make it fun and engaging for them, we're also going to incentivize it. So we're going to have some fun rewards for them throughout the summer as well as August and some end of program awards, if you will. Thank you, Lani. All right. So again, 60 students will be targeted for this ongoing summer program. So we'll have two Summer Bridge caseworkers who will be serving these 60 students, reaching out to every single one of our HACA families that we case manage throughout the year every one of them, even who are not involved in these 60 students that we're targeting, will be contacted. They'll have at least one or two check-ins throughout the summer just to ensure that they're doing okay. If they need any basic needs, if they need assistance registering for school in August, things like that. So although we're going to be focusing on 60 students, we still will be serving the entire Hawkett caseload at least once or twice in the summer. So that's, I'm really excited about that. That's something we're usually able to do with our staff being on break. Weekly home visits for these 60 students, that's something we've been doing this year as well, really in large part because we weren't able to do the Smart Kids After School program like we usually do because of COVID. We really amped up our home visits. And so that just continues building that relationship between the staff and the families. So that's something we will focus on. Also, these weekly on-site development, youth development enrichment group activities, small groups, things that are going to be kind of focused throughout the throughout the day. Like Leilani said, we'll be focusing on all of our four usual sort of Smart Kids sites, so Bolden Oaks, Santa Rita, and Chalmers, Booker T. Washington, and Meadowbrook. So those are going to be, we're going to be doing those on-site activities. We do also generally work with some Rosewood students, so they may be in this targeted 60 students. We'd be doing weekly home visits with them as well. So really it's about six properties that we serve. One-on-one focus on academic and SEL supports, and really, again, re-engaging in school. That was just something that we really saw a slide in for a lot of our students, elementary all the way through high school this year. We want to be sure that we're able to bridge that gap for them moving back into next school year. Again, basic needs and crisis support services. So any of you who know CIS pretty well over the years, we do a lot of crisis support for our students and our families. So we will continue to be there in person, it really able to help them through any crisis that might come up within the family or community. All right, this is one of those sample activities I was mentioning from the Khan Academy. So Growth Mindset in Action. This is just one I kind of plucked from their website. Any of you who are interested in this, by the way, I really recommend looking at the Khan Academy. They have wonderful activities for youth, elementary, all the way through high school. So I just kind of plucked one of my favorite ones. It's a kind of a starting out for an elementary age group. So you can see here, you talk about with students, what is that mindset voice in your head, right, that says, I can't do this. I'm not good at math. I can't. Or I messed up on this problem, and I just can't do it. So it talks about giving that inner voice a nickname, right? And then working through that issue, moving forward. And we would be doing that with students, right? So I'd be saying, well, my nickname is, you know, Poe. That's the name of my dog. And then working through, right? So what do I do when that voice shows up? How can I get past that? What other things can I tell myself? What questions can I ask to kind of get back to the reality of the situation and move through it in a logical manner? So I just think that's a really great opportunity for students to really identify what are those negative things you're telling yourself and how can we move through that? And how can you bring that into the classroom in the fall? Thanks, Leilani. All right, so I mentioned earlier pre-post eval. So we're going to be working on these right now, and we will be administering these to these 60 students that are targeted for the Summer Bridge program. We'll be doing the pre-test, pre-eval in June and the post in August. And so again, we really wanted a way to measure kind of what the starting point was for these students and how we're ending. So I'm excited to see that data when it comes back. These pre-post evals are derived from two different assessment tools that were actually created by the CIS National Office in collaboration with the American Institute of Research. So I'm pretty excited about those. We have most of the questions kind of formatted right now. Right now we're just figuring out the actual, you know, document itself. So excited to see that. I will send it over to Leilani and Barbara once it's completed. The goal here is to really assess, right, the impact of Smart Kids Bridge Program, not just on the academic side or just on the growth mindset, but on that sense of academic motivation, right? How motivated are they to re-engage in school and stay engaged in school throughout next year when we go back to kind of in person and sort of this quote unquote normal school experience? Some sample questions I added at the bottom. I can learn anything in school if I really work at it. right? Again, identifying that kind of negative self-talk that we often tell ourselves, and instead pushing that through to say, you know what, this might be really hard, but I can do it anyway. I can do it if I work hard enough. Graduating high school is important to me, and getting help from others when I make a mistake is a good way to learn. Again, that's something we really see with our students, right? I don't want to ask for help. I don't want somebody to think that I can't do it. So I'm just going to sit here and not push through. And so that's something we want to make sure that they understand. That's a sign of strength, right? To ask for help. So those are kind of our slides. That's our Summer Bridge program. Again, we will be focusing on 60 students, but serving in some way or another every Hakka family throughout June and August. And we're going to, one thing that I'm really excited about, we'll be doing that warm handoff between our Smart Kids coordinators, our Summer Bridge staff, and the students and families in June, and then again in August. It really helps us create that sense of, you know, continuity, and those relationships continue throughout the summer.
Thank you, Kami. So I don't know if anybody has any questions, or we can go through the presentation and then hold questions till the end. It's up to you all how you want to format this. Maybe, are there any quick questions from the commissioners about the communities and schools presentation? Or any comments, maybe?
Mary, can
we do a quick sound check for Mary?
Lena?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Mary.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't have a question, but I just wanted to I am so proud of this program. This is great. I am really, really excited about this for the kids. So thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
Yeah. Tammy, what's the age group, or what's the age range of these 60 kids?
Yeah, great question. We will be working like we usually do, all the way from kindergarten all the way through high school. So we'll be working with every age range.
And how are they identified?
So our current, I actually sent out a long list of criteria not too long ago, kind of thinking about this. So our Smart Kids coordinators and program managers, whoever specifically works with these, our Hakka students on campuses, will be focusing on, you know, are they engaged in CIS and Smart Kids? Right? They are, if they're case managed. And did they have maybe some difficulty working through, maybe they went back to campus in person, really struggled with their anxiety, kind of the situation being on campus, and just decided to go back home. And they're really not engaging in school at home, right? There's really a struggle to get them logged in, or it's a struggle for them to get the same grades that they did prior to COVID. Any students that we saw really decline in grades and attendance throughout this COVID pandemic, those are the students we're really targeting and focusing on. And then we're going to have a conversation with the student and the family about whether or not they're willing to engage in this program with us in the summer. And so we talk about the benefits. We talk about what we'll do with them, things like that. And so it's kind of a combination of things.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Now, I'm asking the CIS staff to consider the questions that are asked, and at the regular board meeting to perhaps include that information that you provided just now as part of your presentation that would assist the other board members as well. Okay, so I guess we should move on because our time is very limited.
I agree. Thank you so much. Before I proceed with the Boys and Girls Club slide, I would like to give Barbara Jackson an opportunity to speak about, you know, the approach that we're taking this time around for our summer youth program. So, Barbara, take it away.
Sure. Thank you, Leilani. Yes, I'm Barbara Jackson, Family Opportunity Project Director. We are working with students that are under a lot of different pressures at this time. And engaging students in learning is always really complex. So what we're trying to focus on is how to engage, disengage frustrated and anxious students. They want time with their peers. They want time away from remote learning. And their parents are also feeling these same feelings along with economic pressures and the need to work. So we know that learning happens most effectively in relationship. We know that students want to have fun in the summer and spend time with their peers. The program partners that we chose to address the learning slide understand this, as well as have designed their summer programs to provide the components that the HACA students need to engage and to learn. Because the very first thing we need, we can't mandate that anyone participate in our programs, is we need them to show up. And oftentimes this is complex because parents may be asking students to attend, but maybe they go to work and the students then have the choice whether to attend or not. So we want them to choose to attend and engage. And all of our partners have learning outcomes related to state, you know, TEA guidelines. Many are science and STEM related. Others like CIS also involves social emotional learning and engagement around how to learn. All of the partners are our trusted partners, and they know our students and they know our families. So that's really our approach to make sure we can address the learning loss effectively.
Great. Thanks, Barbara. So I'll go ahead and start with the Boys and Girls Club slide. So as you all are aware, we already have three clubs that are on site. We have a club at Chalmers South, a club at Booker T. Washington, and a club at Meadowbrook. So when we approached, Boys and Girls Club about the Summer Youth Program, this is a creative way to add more students to attend their clubs during the summertime. So what the Boys and Girls Club has proposed is a contract of the cost of $65,500 just for the summertime period, and it's going to be academically focused. So it'll be a school-day summer learning, promotes on-time graduation, very similar and parallel to what Cami was speaking about. But also we also have a back-to-school task force meeting where I and Austin Pathways managers meet with Susan Newell, who's the Director of Academics with AISD. And so we share conversations about what works and what doesn't. And just to share with y'all, all these programs that I'm sharing here are also aligned with the AISD, Eames, Round Rock, Maynard school districts, where they needed to find different ways to keep the kids engaged to stay in school, because there was a very big, you know, academic slide during that time. So with that in mind, Boys and Girls Club have proposed that since in the summer, just like with AISD and CIS, not everybody goes to work during the summer, and that's the benefit of being an educator. So that being said, we found a creative way to still get our kids engaged, and what we'll do for this summer is we are going to add Rosewood, Thurmond, and Georgian, where the kids will be bused into the club. So the Rosewood students will be bused into the Booker T. Washington Club, and the Thurmond and Georgian students are bused at their club at Woolridge Elementary School, and there'll be 40 youth per property. So although we're not going to be launching a brand new club just for the summer, we did find a way to get more students from the other properties, Rosewood, Thurmond, and Georgian, to be included in those clubs so they can get some summer learning. And of course, very similar to what they do year round, but much more focused this summer, is we did request for the Boys and Girls Club to really focus on the academic slide. So the curriculum that they will be presenting will be, yes, it will be fun. However, there is a focus on STEM, fine arts, healthy lifestyles, and character and leadership. So just in interest of time, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Barbara again to go through the rest of the next few slides.
Great. Thank you, Leilani. We've also engaged with our youth specifically around the youth internship program and work this summer. And part of that, of course, engagement in work is engagement in those skills that you need to be successful at work. And work readiness and academic readiness should always be aligned, right? And are aligned. So that program is already in process, but we have added in a little funding for a culminating event so that we can further engage the students all the way to the end. Our Health Start partner has a wonderful program that we've often combined with our summer lunch program in previous years, but this year our summer lunch program is going to be delivered meals because of COVID. And so they're going to do this independently in person. It's a health science cooking and nutrition program for children and their parents. Age 3 to 10 is their focus group, but they accept children of any age. And the older kids, they have plans to engage them as leaders with the younger students. Again, a very science-based program, STEM-based program. The Sullivan Learning Center obviously provides learning activities, and our focus will be mostly on the college prep end of the deal, so working with the students that are looking at college and doing the SAT, ACT prep courses with them and providing funding for that, as well as other specific learning needs that we have at specific sites, especially where we don't have all the other programs, the larger sites, you know, is where we have CIS and Boys and Girls Club. Book Springs. Did I get through all the previous slides, Leilani?
I think so. Just
okay.
Checking out.
Right.
Yes. So, yes.
Okay.
Yep. We can proceed.
Thank you. Book Springs has a wonderful program where they deliver books to our families. All the families have to do is request them, and they'll deliver by mail 3 to 5 books per student, and they get to choose the kind of thing that they want to read. And we also have these talented paraeducators that are eager to go. So they will work with the families, getting them to order the books so they have the books coming in, and then set up book clubs with the different age groups of the students and interests in that area. So that will be available at all our properties. Girl Scouts is working on STEM camps. They have a STEM unit that they're going to adapt for summer and deliver most likely at each individual site. We had some hope that they might be able to do a camp kind of thing at Millennium, and they have been working on that. But I think there's still too many transportation challenges to bring kids together for transportation safely. So I think that they're going to deliver their STEM units at each individual site. And that will be ongoing throughout the summer. And then Play to Learn, which is our early childhood education program for 2 to 4 year olds. And then there's a second component that was just developed, and I'm going to let Ben talk about this because he knows it best.
Thank you, Barbara. So in addition to the Play to Learn, which has a focus on 2 to 4 year olds, we have also expanded sort of our menu of choices to include another branch of content or family engagement activities that span the ages of 4 to 8 years old. So I won't get into all the different choices, but they both Play to Learn and these additional choices have it's a family engagement process where it's parent or caregiver plus the child, and they're interacting with PBS Kids content, and especially regarding the age 4 to 8 span, it's mainly STEM-based learning. So it includes a combination of hands-on building, making, experimenting, digital gameplay from PBS Kids apps, viewing of portions of PBS Kids episodes. The main intent in all of that is not only that those activities have value in of themselves, but that along the way, parents and kids are exposed to healthy screen choices for the rest of the summer.
And I just wanted to add that the Play to Learn, the learning focus is really on getting kids ready for school. So we will have priority for the students that are 3 to 4 years old, that are ready to enter kindergarten or getting ready for kindergarten.
Yeah. And I also would say that there may be kids, there likely are kids who did not enroll, even though they were of age to enroll in pre-K and K. Those would be welcome into the program as well.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Sir. And our iDads program and AnyBabyCan both provide parenting activities. The iDads, of course, is focused on fatherhood, and our partnership with AnyBabyCan focuses on parents in general. So we wanted for a long time to further connect those two efforts and make sure that every mother that's involved in parenting knows that there's a program and supports available for fathers. So along with that, as we know, parents have had tremendous stresses. This will be an opportunity to provide all that information about the supports that are available to parents to really help their children be successful, as well as both of these programs are two gens. So parents and kids are learning together. So that's really the focus there, and to better support families through this time and better set them up to support their children's learning. And then that will be provided at all the properties, depending on the response in terms of interest.
So I know there's a time check. Thank you, Sylvia. This is going to be one of the last slides that we'll discuss, and it's just a question and answer. We'll open it up. So just in summary of everything and all the information that we share with you today, and we can't remember every single detail, this chart just pretty much shows you what the youth program is for the summer, which Hawke property. So as you can see, the large menu of options does cover all properties, including PBRA and HCD properties. I also would like to share that Pilar Sanchez, she's listening by phone. She was not able to log in by camera, but she is listening by phone. So I don't know if she wanted to make a comment or have a chance, but this pretty much gives you an overview of, this is a much larger summer youth program, you know, than we had last year, comparatively, for many good reasons, is because, as you all are also aware, that summer camps are limited. Maybe perhaps a summer camp that used to be able to host 100 kids, we're only able to host 50 kids. So there were also limitations in us trying to outreach to those community partners that had the availability to create these programs. So just to share also is, just like Cami shared the CIS program and Boys and Girls Club, these are programs that are created specifically just for Hawke. It's not something that, not necessarily recreating the wheel, but it's really very focused and specialized to the needs and the request of the board. So Pilar, I don't know if you can dial *6. I don't know if you're having technical difficulties, but I know in concept of time, we have 7 minutes, but this is just a thank you slide thank you for your continued support and Hawke families. And the very few minutes, I'd like to entertain it and open it up for questions and answers.
Pilar, do you have anything you want to add? Because I certainly have a couple questions and comments.
Yeah, you know, Leilani and Barbara put it really well. Math took the hardest hit. It's the one area that the kids are struggling most as far as the COVID loss. You know, there's math and reading, but our kids, that's nationwide in the United States, but our kids, really the hardest hit areas are their basic needs. And so just like Barbara said, we found programs that are addressing not just academics, but they're addressing emotional well-being, food security, parent involvement, positive relationship building. Those are the things that are the foundation that are going to help our kids get to be able to absorb the academics.
Okay. And I think this becomes apparent through the discussion and as we've discussed the details of these programs. One of the things that I'm not quite sure about, however, is the real number of students we are serving in these various activities. Now, we know we have 60 under the CIS program, and my question is, are we duplicating the number of students in some of these various activities? Are we trying to increase the number? How many students are being left out and not being served at all? Do we have numbers for the various activities? I don't have a sense of that, and I'm wondering, can you provide that kind of information to us?
I don't know that I have time to provide it all right now, but I do have it available, and I can get that to you to answer those questions, because we do have, you know, so many kids in this group and so many kids in this group, the way that they can serve. Now, sometimes the kids that come forward want to participate in everything, and then the more reluctant ones have to be, it's more effort to engage, right? And we want to, right, we want to hit the kids that have the most need. So yeah. Every effort will be made, you know, to serve the broadest number of kids. That's how we always want to do things. But some kids really want to dive into everything, and if there's space available, we'll allow them. But in general, our goal is to involve as many kids as possible, and it is a broad age range, so there isn't as much overlap as it might seem.
Right. Now, the books, though you're saying you're providing books for every single student at every single property, is that happening? And how can we increase the number of books, and can we make sure that every student is indeed getting books?
Well, that's the work that we want to engage the parent educators with, because a parent has to fill out this online form to request the books. So the parent educators will be following up with parents and helping them do that, so the students have the books coming in, and then taking the next step of seeing who we can also engage into a, you know, a book club.
And who's checking out the reading level? Or the books.
That's part of what Book Springs does.
Okay. And what can we do to assist in providing books? For example, I go to HEB and they have books on sale for $1. So I pick up about 10 or 20 when I go. I have about 20 in my car right now riding around with me. And they certainly are not enjoying themselves. So I need to get rid of those 20, right? So how do I get them to somebody who will use them? And what else can we do like that? And why can't we involve HEB since they're willing to deal with this issue of literacy for our children?
I would imagine that HEB might be donating to Book Springs, who's an ongoing partner. So they've also been willing to come and set up libraries at our sites. But we've just been closed down and not have the spaces open for people to come in and get those books. So we'll be kicking that back up as we open up. And, you know, if you want some more information about where to get your books, I'd be happy to provide that to you as well. We have various amounts of books at different sites depending on what the resident councils want and what programs we have going. But that's something that we're working on, definitely, as we reopen.
Good. Okay, any other questions from other commissioners? Okay, I know we're supposed to stop at noon, and that gives us about 2 minutes. And I want to be respectful of everyone's time, but I also want to thank all of our guests for coming, sharing with us the information they have provided and the thoughtfulness that went into the programming that they have shared with us, because I know that this is a very difficult activity and very difficult trying to provide activities that are going to engage the students and at the same time be able to provide this bridge that is so important in terms of the STEM activities. And we wish you the best of luck in doing that. And, I see Edwina waving her arm madly.
One question, probably for Leilani. How are we recruiting and marketing and advertising so that we do have a good component of our students, residents, participating in these various programs?
That's a great question, and we've actually have been masters of marketing because we do have the Hawker Resident and Client Support Center. So not only is it a combination of emails through our databases as well as our community partners, we also have texts that we sent out to all of the families that would qualify. We also do flyering, and we have done that even during the pandemic. So the marketing piece is done both virtually and in person. It's also shared at every single resident council meeting so then all the families are aware of the program. And sometimes it's double marketing. We'll talk about Boys and Girls Clubs, but then the Boys and Girls Club will go out and flyer door to door. Same with communities in schools. So there's plenty of information that's being dispersed across all 18 properties so that every family is aware of all these programs that are happening concurrently across all 18 properties. So hopefully that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Sylvia, do I hand it back to you all? I don't want to take any more time. It is 12:01. So, thank you all for the opportunity.
Thank you, Leilani. Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, all of you. And we hope to see you again. We're going to get a report at the end of the summer, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Sylvia, do you want to take over, and do we have a two-minute break before we transition to the regular board meeting?
I think that's a great idea, Madam Chair, but why don't we go ahead and have you entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Oh, you think that would be a good idea?
I think so.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn our program review committee meeting?
Moving.
And Mary, are you there?
I second.
Okay. And I have a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
So moved. Meeting is adjourned.
So, Madam Chair, what time do we want to go ahead and kick off the full board meeting? You said a two-minute break?
Oh, let's do three.
So 12:05. We will return for the full board meeting. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So, Chairman Ritchie, I will be acting as secretary for today's meeting. And may I go ahead and proceed with roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay. Chairman Ritchie?
President.
Vice Chair Bailey?
Here.
Second Vice Chair Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Here.
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Okay, we have a full quorum.
All right.
Hold up with 1 second.
Carl, I muted your phone. Yeah, we can hear you through your computer now.
Stay shopping, Carl.
Commissioner Ritchie, would you like to go ahead and proceed with citizens' communication?
Yes, now that I got the system working, go ahead.
Okay. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board?
No, thank you. This is Mary.
Thank you, Ms. Elshire. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to provide citizens' communication? Okay. Hearing none, Chairman Ritchie, at this time we would go ahead and open up the three public hearings that we have scheduled for today. Ben Shortner with Austin Affordable Housing Corporation will be taking lead on these public hearings.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Is there hold on for a second before we do that. I know we've got public hearings, but they don't require us to take action, correct? We just got to hear from the general public?
Correct.
Why don't we take up the action items? I know Commissioner Bailey and I both are on a time clock. So why don't we go ahead so we can be have a quorum for voting purposes, and let's go to the action items first, and then we can come back to the public hearing next.
Okay. So really the only item that requires action is the one consent item, and that's to approve the board minute summary for the meeting held on April 15th, 2021.
Okay. Let's take that up. So at this time, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the board minutes from the board meeting on April 15th. Are there any objections?
I so move.
Second motion.
Motion by Commissioner Apostello, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. All right, let's go back to the public hearing.
Okay. Suzanne, looks like you have the first one is for Belmont Apartments.
Yes, the first one is Belmont Apartments. It's a partnership with LDG Development. This will be a family site with tax credits, 146 units. We will serve incomes between 50% and 70% area median income. This is located right next to our Bridget Cameron Apartments off of Cameron Road, just south of Runberg. Does anyone have any comments from the public?
Okay. Hearing none. Suzanne, would you like to go ahead and proceed with the second public hearing, the second item?
The second item is a partnership with Bonner Carrington. This is the first one we will be doing with them. We're really excited about it. The property is Cypress Creek Homes at Howard Lane. This one is located off of Howard Lane, just west of Interstate 35, right by Connolly High School. We will have 362 units, family units that will be serving people at 60% area median family income and below. And we'll have a handful of market rates so that anybody that starts to earn more money over the 60%, we will be able to keep them in the apartment complex. And I guess, do we have anyone that needs to, that would like to make a comment on this one? Okay.
Hearing none. If you can go ahead and proceed with the third one, Suzanne.
Okay, the third one is the Conrad. This is also a partnership with LDG Development. It is a family site, and it's located off of Interstate 35, South Austin, and Onion Creek Parkway. This will have 280 units, and it will serve area median income levels from 50% to 70%. And it also is a tax credit property. Do we have anyone that wants to comment on the project?
Thank you, Suzanne. Well, it looks like we do not have any public comments at this time. So Chairman Ritchie, if you would want to entertain going ahead and closing out the public hearing.
All right, the chair will entertain a motion to close we just had on the three properties.
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Suzanne, Ron, on the first one on the Belmont, since it's located next to the Bridget Cameron, what's the occupancy at the Bridget Cameron? Is it leasing up or, I mean, what's the status? Is it under construction? So what's the status?
The Bridget Cameron is complete. We are leasing up currently, and we've really picked up. We're at like 60% occupancy. we've really picked up now that COVID has kind of starting to see an end in sight. By the time we complete the Belmont, that'll be like 2 years down the road. So we will definitely be stabilized and ready for some more units.
Okay. And my second question, just to remind the commissioners, so this is the very first step in moving forward on these three transactions, question mark. And how many more times will we see these before we actually have approvals and we're moving forward?
Okay, you've already seen these once for bond inducement resolutions and the tax credit resolution. This is kind of we've gotten the bond reservations, and we are proceeding to the finish line. So this is the step before we reach the finish line. So you will see these all again next month for final resolutions if we are approved to move forward.
Okay.
And that will be the last time you see them. And I will have very detailed information on the breakdowns of units, on those that are serving from 50 to 70% area median family income. I'll have those breakdowns for you because I know Tyra really likes to see those. So we'll have very detailed information for you next month.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to acknowledge, we do have Mr. Casey Bump and with Bonner Carrington and Jake with LDG. Joining us today in the event there are any additional questions.
I've got a question, and it's really not a question. I just want to get something on the record, so I already know the answer to this. But there is no connection between Commissioner Carrington and Bonner Carrington. You know, the lawyer, you know, we and I assume I knew the answer to that, that there is none. And just want the record to reflect it.
That is correct, sir.
That is correct, Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, better safe than sorry. Thank you.
So, Chairman Ritchie, at this time, we can go ahead and close the public hearing and proceed with the rest of the board meeting.
So, is there a motion to – so there was a motion made, and there's a second, I believe, on the floor. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. So the public hearings on the three proposed developments is closed at this time. So we'll go back to item number two, which is an update on HACA's action related to COVID.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to turn it over to Pilar Sanchez to provide just a brief update on the resident and client support center.
Yes, good afternoon, commissioners. The client support center continues to operate. While we do have a very low incoming call flow, we do have a large outgoing call and texting and email flow. The support center has become a great tool for us to be able to reach our residents and inform them of the latest services that are available. For example, this month over 1,500 outbound texts were made to remind residents of the free COVID testing that's being offered door-to-door at all our HACA properties. And we also used it to notify residents that the second round of COVID vaccines was coming their way. We have second doses coming to Gaston, Lakeside, North Loop, and Rosewood Courts. In all, our Bringing Health Home team has secured at least 500 doses, vaccines at our site. They are expanding to our family site, and they continue to provide testing at all our sites as well. And is it a different item to go over the activities, Sylvia, or is this the right time to go through that?
So I will turn it over to you to discuss the summer programs for COVID-19. But I did want to, before handing that over to you, Pilar, to share with the board that the agency is actively making preparations for a return to the office starting in June. So we will have some limited occupancy within the central headquarters office, making sure that we have all of the necessary safety protocols, sanitizing stations and sneeze guards and all of those types of materials. And I'm also very, very excited to report that we have an over 85% vaccination rate amongst our staff. So that equates to over about 209 employees by June 1st will be fully vaccinated. So we are very excited about that, and we're going to strive for 100% by the 4th of July, if at all possible. And again, we will be having some limited occupancy for June, and with a plan to ramp up further from there within the next 6 months. So at that point, again, we are still continuing to balance the operational needs with the needs of staff who may have limited access to childcare, for example, or maybe caring for an elderly parent. So we're taking all of that into account and balancing those needs with our operational needs as well. But at this time, I would like to go ahead and toss it over back to Pilar, who's going to provide a quick overview on the Hawke Summer programs to address learning impact from COVID-19. We did have an opportunity to do a deeper dive during the program review committee meeting. And so we'll go ahead and provide a synopsis for the full board at this time. Pilar?
Yes, Andrea, can I share my screen?
Yes, hold on 1 second, Pilar.
So this is item number 3 under action items.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This is item 3.
Pilar, you're currently the presenter.
This is our summary slide here. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Yes.
So as you all recall, during our, I believe it was our January meeting where we were bringing communities and schools in to renew their contract, the board actually graciously added $250,000 to the budget to be able to provide services that would address the COVID slide and how that compounds with the summer slide. So the staff had a challenge filling that great offer that you gave us. Thank you for that. There's a lot of organizations that are not providing services in person yet. A lot of them are struggling to have employees come back to work. But they did pull together this amazing smorgasbord of great services. We do know that the COVID pandemic interrupted our lives, interrupted education. The biggest impacts were across the country, the biggest impacts were in math and reading, but that's in streamlined America, mainstream America. At our sites, our families were hardest hit with basic needs. And so we found programs that addressed not only academics, but addressed health and well-being, positive relationships, mentoring, engagement with their parents. And so this is the list of organizations that will be working with us that we propose to work with us to fulfill your gift to Austin Pathways of $250,000 for this summer. It's the Boys and Girls Club extending their services to Thurman, Georgian, and Rosewood. They would bus our kids to the sites that are nearest to that. Communities and Schools is expanding several of the programming to at least another additional 60 kids. And then we have a summer youth internship program that we're running from Hawke. We used to run the program in partnership with Travis County and the City of Austin, but we piloted our own last year, and it's worked really well. That's a $22,000 program, but we brought in a match of $20,000 from Satellite Mattress. So what older kids will be able to experience in an in-office summer internship. Help Start that brings in some science-based cooking and eating habits. And then we are also proposing putting money away for Sylvan Learning Center or similar programs for our residents to be able to choose the programs that they want to attend that focus on academics. And so we're putting money away for scholarships for that. And then there's Book Springs that we've been working with. We will be we will be connecting our paraeducators to Book Springs because there are some, there is some program registration and forms that need to be filled out. So our parent educators will go out door to door and encourage parents to participate and then help them navigate the registration process. And that brings books to all of our kids at all our sites. And it can be a sort of like a subscription where the books keep coming and they're customized based on the child's age. Girl Scouts will continue come and provide some services to our residents at several of these sites. And we're bringing Play to Learn from Taylor U back. It's a very successful program that we brought when we first started our digital inclusion programming. And they have two programs, one for younger kids from two to five, I believe, and then another program from five to eight. And so that that also will be a dual generation program that will engage the families, and it does include meals as well. And then lastly, Murphy Roland from our staff and Josh from our staff came up with the idea of putting together Any Baby Can and IDAP to serve all of our property and to help with more parenting and combining those two programs. That's my attempt at a very quick summary of what the Program Review Committee listened to earlier today.
Thank you, Pilar. Commissioners, are there any questions regarding the proposed programs? Or any comments?
Quick question. Do we put any of these out for bid, or we just take them as volunteers that want to help us?
Because all of them are really small amounts, we didn't take them out to bid. What we did is we worked with partners that have proven to be successful and know our families and understand the needs of our families. So we did not go out to bid.
Well, the only one that I wondered about is Sylvan Learning. You know, they got lots of competition. And,
right, and so we are not partnering with Sylvan Learning. What we're doing is we're setting aside money for scholarships for families that need more intense academic and want to go through a program like that. They have summer programs, and they can do them for individuals or they can do them for groups. So we're going to work with them to see if they can give discounts. Maybe we can put a group together to go to their South Lamar location. But it's not a partnership with Sylvan Learning. It's just putting away scholarship money for kids.
Right. And Commissioner Bailey, as a reminder, we have bid out the CIS contracts and Boys and Girls Clubs contracts in the past. So this is really an extension of that existing work.
Okay. Thanks.
Right. Chairman Ritchie, I think we can proceed with the item number 4, which is an update on HACA's work to address community homelessness. And Mr. Gerber and Dylan Schubitz will be taking lead on this presentation. Mike, you're on mute.
There we go. Good morning, everybody. Sorry to be a few minutes late. Dylan Schubitz, who oversees and helps direct intake and the operations of our special purpose programs in Lisa's shop, rental assistance, and he's been with us for quite some time. I think 14 years. Is that right, Dylan?
That's right. I started in assisted housing in 2007.
And has done a great job, except for gloating about the Yankees' victory last night over the Rangers. Other than that, he's a great guy and has a wealth of... a wealth of experience in dealing with homelessness issues, and he has been our liaison with ECHO and with other city leadership. And one thing I would highlight about Dylan, since many of you don't know him or have worked with him on a regular basis, Dylan was actually singled out when our city announced the end to veterans homelessness 4 or 5 years ago in a large gathering at City Hall, the whole room overflowing with the HUD secretary and the mayor. Dylan was the one guy singled out for his work in helping a particular homeless vet, chronically homeless vet, who was really struggling to get across the finish line. So he brings a lot of energy and passion to the work. So, Dylan, why don't you take over and describe our work in the homelessness space, and then we can I'll offer color commentary.
Great. Yeah, thank you, Mike. It's a privilege to speak with you all today, and good to meet you. Andrew, we can take the next slide, please. So this is a summary of our ongoing initiatives. Recently, the Board of Commissioners approved 125 project-based vouchers that will ultimately end homelessness for, initially 125 people. The three bullets here outline the three awards that were made by the board. The first partnership with Foundation Communities at their Waterloo and Capitol Studios properties. Both those are existing units, and we are well on our way to getting those under contract. Foundation Communities told me this morning they've completed their environmental reviews, and now we just need to select the units to get them under contract and begin paying subsidies. 50 at the Bungalows, one of the City of Austin's hotel conversion projects. That's a rehabilitation project anticipated to come online early 2022, according to their application. And the our inspections department in assisted housing has provided some guidance recently about getting those units rehabbed in a way that will meet the federal inspection standards. And finally, the 50 at Sparrow at Rutland project spearheaded by Caritas of Austin. 25 of those 50 units will be dedicated to the HUD-BASH program for homeless veterans. And that is a new construction expected to come online in early 2023, I believe is the timeline. Next up, we've got the 100 mainstream vouchers. That was an additional funding award that came through the CARES Act. The target population were the residents of the protective lodging facilities. Those were the non-congregate emergency shelters that the city stood up in different hotels around Austin. And of the 100 vouchers, we've issued more than 80 to date. At least a quarter of them have already moved out into permanent housing, and the rest are well on their way. The remaining 20 vouchers, we've identified the families and are working through eligibility, just some documentation that needs to come through for those families before we can issue the vouchers. And we are assisting the city with the goal of decommissioning those protective lodges and exiting all the residents to permanent housing. The last ongoing initiative I wanted to highlight was the Continuum of Care program. This is a grant that we've had for many years. ECHO is the Continuum of Care lead agency. They coordinate the collaborative application. So this is sort of like a quasi block grant that comes to Austin through ECHO. There's a local competition among the service providers. And this year, our funding award was $765,486, minus about $50,000 for administrative fees, leaves about $700,000 for rental assistance per year. And that new grant year started May 1st. The closeout of our previous grant year, we spent all of the money except, I think, $648. So we effectively spent 99.999% of our money in that grant, which was pretty exciting for me.
And Dylan, is it fair to say that a continuum of care, the continuum of care program, is really the connective tissue between all of the service providers? It's the technology, it's a lot of some of the casework, it's a variety, it's the management systems and technology that others are using so that we're all synced up to best collaboratively serve the homeless folks that have been identified in our city. And right now, the number in the latest point in time count was about 2,600, but the city has most recently set the goal of trying to find housing for 3,000 homeless individuals over the next 2 years. And so the continuum of care is, again, that connective tissue between all the service providers, and HACA is one of them, and ECHO as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you move that slide up? Because after permanent supportive housing, I can't see what else is on there. It's cut off.
Absolutely.
It doesn't look like I'm able to move it up.
Sorry, that last bullet just highlights the new grant and the new grant funding amount of $765,486.
Okay. So, Mike, if I heard you correctly, you said that the number of homeless people is approximately 2,600.
That was in the last point in time count, which was done pre-pandemic. Because of the pandemic, okay, they couldn't do another point in time count. But based on what they have seen and extrapolated from the work they've done around the camping issue and other issues, they've set a formal goal through a summit that was held fairly recently, which we participated in, of creating 3,000 permanent supportive housing units over the next 2 years.
Okay, you said three, because initially I thought four, and that's why I was asking the question. But it's three. That makes sense.
Yes, sir.
I've got a question. Explain to me how this is actually going to work on the ground. We've got these vouchers, and I read in the paper where Dallas got 1,000 vouchers. Are these the same kind of vouchers we're getting?
I get to that on the next slide.
All right. And if you're going to answer these questions later, then I'll be quiet. But, and by the way, I'm a Yankee fan, unless they're playing the Rangers. So,
all right.
Well, I assume that these homeless folks will have to go through some sort of application process to get one of these vouchers, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Typically, the coordinated entry system is the sort of the single point of entry for many programs across the community, including many APACAs.
We're not going to just go out to the camps and say, we'll take you and you and you. Here's your voucher.
Not quite. So the coordinated entry system so if someone enters the coordinated entry system by completing an assessment with an outreach worker or someone, you know, the VA has trained assessors, the Safe Alliance, many of the partners in the community, definitely all the outreach teams, the host teams, paramedics and police and mental health workers that comprise a host team all complete those assessments. Those assessments determine someone's acuity or vulnerability. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then do these, financially, do these work the same as our regular vouchers where we will pay up to a certain amount and then they pay the rest?
Yeah, generally that's correct. There's some...
My question then is, these folks are homeless and most of them don't have any money. So how's that going to work?
Chuck, I think Commissioner, I think you're asking a bunch of good questions. If I could ask you to hold some of those, there are some differences in the emergency housing voucher program that we're going to be administering that I think will answer some of these questions. So give us about 2 minutes to go through a little bit more of the presentation and then we'll come back to that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Well, this slide, we're outlining some of our new and pending initiatives. First, the Foster Youth to Independence Initiative. That's part of the current push to end youth and family homelessness. We submitted this application in late March. There's an award pending. We haven't heard yet if we've received these vouchers. We applied for 75, and HUD anticipates making award announcements in June for a July 1st go-live date for those. This would target young people age 18 to 24 who've had foster care involvement in their late teenage years and have possibly aged out of the system. So that would be a partnership with ECHO, with the Texas Department of Family Protective Services and LifeWorks to provide services to those clients. Next, I want to highlight the project-based vouchers. We're preparing right now a new request for proposals to release in June. So this is very much in line with helping the city meet their goal of 3,000 new units that that Mike just outlined. And we're really hoping this round of applications will see some more applications for existing housing, so things that'll get on the ground and people housed more quickly, as opposed to the longer timeline for new construction. And then, finally, the emergency housing vouchers. Those that award came down just last week. We received an offer to accept 242 emergency housing vouchers. This program is funded by the American Rescue Plan. It's a brand new program with a lot of new and exciting opportunities for implementation. And in our acceptance of those 242 vouchers, we notified HUD that we'd be willing to accept up to 258 more for a total of 500 administered by HACA. So on the next slide, I wanted to outline some of the new and exciting features of this emergency housing voucher program. So first and foremost, the target population is people experiencing homelessness, fleeing domestic violence or human trafficking, and people who are at risk of homelessness. And sort of a fourth subpopulation are people who are formerly homeless in programs but are at risk of losing that housing, that are at risk of returning to homelessness from that homelessness program. This program has a regulatory requirement to collaborate with the Continuum of Care Lead Agency. So in Austin, that is ECHO. We really do have a great head start because of our existing relationship with ECHO and our involvement in all the initiatives here in Austin. The money drops July 1st. Lease-ups can begin then. There's a lot of flexibility on implementation. Basically, we can have parallel rules to the regular voucher program for, loosening barriers to entry to the program, so documentation requirements, screening criteria, and things like that. And there's a very unique funding structure for this program, which I'll talk about on the next slide, if you would, Andrea. So there are lots of financial incentives for certifying eligibility for the households and leasing them up within 4 months. So basically, from July 1st, for every family that we issue a voucher to, we get 100 extra bucks. And for every family that we house in those 4 months, we get an extra 400. So there's money behind the urgency here. HUD also is providing administrative funds for startup fees. So starting June 1st, we will receive some dollars to help staff up and get this program running. This program has fully funded administrative fees. So right now in the regular voucher program, HUD has prorated the administrative fees, which are paid per family leased up in the program. For this program, they are fully funding the administrative fees. And then the last most interesting part of this this program, in my opinion, is that HUD is funding services fees. So $3,500 per voucher awarded can go to the activities that are outlined in these four bullets. So we can assist families with deposits and application fees. We can fund housing search assistance for families. We can use this money to provide incentives for landlords to rent to people in this program and to do recruitment efforts. And there's also the ability to pay things like moving costs, household, startup items, dishes, furniture, things like that, and utility arrears as well. So part of the startup task here is to collaborate with ECHO and determine what this service fee package is going to look like here locally at HACA, and then to start spending it. So that's the full summary of the new program. But I'm happy to take questions about the new program or anything else I've mentioned here.
So I do have a question, but I will see if there are others who do have questions. My question relates to this third bullet point, landlord recruitment and incentives. Given the state of the housing market here in Austin, although we've had COVID for the past, year or 15 months, what I'm learning is that the housing market is hotter than ever. I mean, home prices are selling. This is a booming market. How does that, or whether does that impact our ability to recruit landlords, given that you've got such an escalation in home prices, which means there's a shortage? So I guess there's people living in apartment complex and multifamily developments, given they can't find new housing. So is that having an impact on your ability to recruit landlords to participate in this program? And
yes.
Is the incentive money enough to attract them to come into the program?
Yes, that's absolutely a concern. One of the things that HUD allows us to be flexible on is setting the payment standards for these vouchers. So in our regular voucher program, we set a payment standard, which is essentially the maximum value of the voucher. And that applies across all of our programs, essentially. HUD allows us to set a separate payment standard up to 120% of fair market rent for this program, separate from the regular voucher program. So right off the bat there, basically we're able to increase the universe of available housing if we choose to set the payment standard higher than 100% of the FMR or 105% of the FMR, as we have with the regular voucher program. So right there, if we choose to do that, if we choose to implement that, there will be just a new world of landlords whose properties were too expensive. They may not be too expensive anymore. So then beyond that, just because a client can afford to rent those units doesn't mean the landlord will. So the incentives can potentially be, as HUD suggested in their PIH notice, like a sign-on bonus. Like if you agree to rent to someone in this program, we can give you X amount of dollars. But HUD has offered suggestions, but hasn't been like extremely prescriptive about what those incentive programs can look like. So there is room for creativity. We're optimistic that we'll be able to find more landlord participants through those recruitment and incentives.
Okay. Others have a question?
Commissioner, I'll just interject. We're really excited about the whole thing. The fact that HUD's fronted dollars, that they're allowing these other purposes to be part of the mix, says that they really do want to try to address homelessness. And so we're really encouraged by those additional uses of these resources. These are things that our supportive services partners and through our collaborations with, others in this community and around the country, these are things that we've all been talking about for years. So it's really a great down payment on, the full funding that we need to run the program and to provide the supports that people will need. Now, it's limited funding, but it's, 242 more than we had. And our hope is that we would be able to, receive even additional funding if possible. So that's why we've put in the request for an additional 258. We think about 500 vouchers is probably what we can handle. Coupled, again, with the work that we're going to be doing on the project-based voucher side within our existing Housing Choice Voucher Program, our existing Section 8 program, where we're going to convert some of those to project-based housing for our homeless neighbors. And so, we've already done 125 units. We're looking at probably, because of the increases we're seeing in vouchers, to potentially put an RFP for as many as 250 vouchers this summer. So the combined total could be as much as, 242 plus 250 plus 125. So we're feeling like we're doing our part to really try to be part of the solution here in a community that really is and struggling to figure it out. And so we'll keep you apprised, but we wanted to at least give you an update on our work to date. And Dylan will keep us all posted on how it's going. This is some of the hardest work that HACA does, because you really don't have, you're dealing with folks with such profound mental health issues, across the board, and the instability of housing, walking in. Almost everyone who comes here is dealing with a crisis, but these are some of our clients who are most struggle to work through those issues and to be successful in finding stable housing as well as safe and decent housing. So, we'll keep you posted on the work that we're doing. We're really glad that Integral Care, our city's mental health agency, is a big part of our work. And several of the other partners, from Caritas to Salvation Army to Trinity Center, to Front Steps, all are engaged. And so this should help make a difference.
And Mike, I was going to ask you, that was my other question, about coordinated or the continuum of services that have to go along with it, because it's one thing to provide housing, but if you're not providing, services such as treatment, whether it's mental health, whether it's for an alcohol addiction, et cetera, and then some sort of, what I would call kind of a job training program or skills training program, so that when people wake up in the morning, as Alan Graham likes to refer to, giving them a purpose. So is all of that being built into the program? I know we got the housing component, but I'm just wondering, is that also part of it as well?
Some of it is, and some of it isn't. The supportive services piece is probably the biggest thing we're lacking in this community. We could provide 1,000 vouchers tomorrow, but our city would probably struggle. Our supportive services providers would not be able to provide the supports with the capacity they've got. And there's not yet been the build out that we need in order to really meet those additional needs. So that's why we're moving methodically and slowly through this and working with those partners. Coordinated assessment run by ECHO will identify those folks who can be most successful. They'll refer them to us. We'll issue vouchers and the funding for the additional supportive services that they need. And our goal is to plug them, connect them, with the right partner and the right services, and plug any gaps that may exist, in what's prevented them from having stable housing in the past. But it's going to be slow and difficult. And I think the community knows that there's a big supportive services gap. That topic was, I would say, topic number two that came up in this most recent summit on addressing unsheltered homelessness in Austin that is being chaired by, has been chaired by, Lynn Meredith and Mayor, under Mayor Adler's direction. And so it was about 250 different leaders in the community. Dylan and I and Lisa were part of that discussion, and we were honored to be so. But I think that the supportive services piece came out loud and clear as being a huge obstacle. Dylan, anything you'd add to that?
I think you pretty much summed it up. We've been pretty successful in some other initiatives, sort of upgrading some existing support services from other programs, but those services are often time limited. So it's enough to get someone through the admissions process, get someone housed, get someone stable, and then most often what we see is those funding sources require that you exit those. They're designed to be time limited. What we really need is those permanent supportive housing supports at the highest levels, the greatest supports, the small caseloads, where those people who need the most support to stay housed can receive it ongoing without time limits. So yes, we've been successful in identifying those supports initially to get people housed. There's definitely a need in this city for the ongoing supports for the people who require those ongoing supports.
Mike, I've got it.
Rather than taking up more time on it, let me just make a suggestion, if you don't mind. Can you guys put together kind of a white paper just for the board on additional needs related to this issue? Because Obviously, again, you can provide housing, but the other services that, you know, Dylan just talked about and you outlined, and then what's lacking behind those, because as Chuck is out talking to his good friend, Steve Bresnan, who was one of the leaders in this no camping ban movement, and I and others, Tara and Edwina, when we're out talking to folks in the community, you know, when people are talking about it, we can also talk about what else needs to take place. That was, you know, you got the referendum passed, that's great, but that doesn't solve the problem. There are other things that need to be, and people need to put that same time and energy into helping the community get these other services. And so for us, what are those things that we could talk about? You know, because the more, even if it's just at a cocktail hour or a social function, if we're able to talk about it, again, we create the discussion and create the awareness that people need to have. So I'll shut up, and Chuck, you can.
Now, that you covered what I was going to talk about, Carl. I've got several questions, but I think I'll just wait and look at the white paper. I think that's a good idea.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. If there are no additional comments on this one, if we can go ahead and move on to item 5, which is an update on Austin Affordable's acquisition and development activities. And Ron Kowal will take on this this item. Ron?
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, everybody else who's online. I'll be very brief. You heard this afternoon from Suzanne giving you step 2 of the first 3 deals that have been being worked on since probably spring of 2020. As she mentioned, those 3 deals will come to you in the June board meeting next month for final resolution approvals. They'll be your typical resolutions for AAHC, Austin Housing Public Facility Corporation, as well as the Housing Authority. So it'll be one of those where we'll go from meeting to meeting to meeting. Those will be coming to you in June. Additionally, we have 2 more deals that we've been working on, new construction that Suzanne will be presenting as public hearings to you at the June meeting as well. And then after that public hearing, those will then come to you again in the July meeting. So 5 deals. We've dwindled those down some. The list started some 18 months ago. I would say probably it was more 8 or 9, maybe a little more or less, but some deals didn't make the cut. These are the ones that have been going through some deep dives and due diligence by all parties involved, and feel that these are the best very, very good opportunities for the Housing Authority to and Austin Affordable to partner at. So I just wanted to give you a heads up there that those will be coming to you in June and July. I also wanted to let you know, if you remember, in April you approved the partnership of us and Belveron to purchase the South Park Meadows, which will soon be named the Bridge at South Park Meadows. And that deal will be closing on May 27th. That's the 570-unit apartment complex. I'm happy to say that as of yesterday when I was out there, we are at 97% occupied there, and traffic is very brisk. It's going to be a very, very, very successful property for us as well. Other than that, we are to address, I think I heard Chairman Ritchie talk about the apartment market and things. I can attest to you that things are getting very, very amped up again. Traffic is starting to pick up quite heavily in the last few weeks, if not the last month. We're seeing activity across the board in all our locations, which is a good thing. We're still battling some repairs and some issues on the from the storms. I know you've always seen and heard from on the RAD side, but I just thought I'd share with you. I don't have a list to put in front of you today, but across the AHC portfolio, and this doesn't include almost all of the new construction properties, with the exception of Springdale and Urban Oaks, which is, we inherited about $2.5 million in damages across the portfolio. And we also had about $120,000 in loss of rent coverage and about $100,000 more in miscellaneous. Most of that is covering new zoning requirements. When you have to go back and re-permit something, you have to bring things up to code. So we were very fortunate that the insurance coverage treated this as a single occurrence. So the deductibles didn't apply across the portfolios. They only applied as a one-time deductible for the entire portfolio. So instead of having a $50,000 deductible at one property and a $25,000 at the other, and it was just a one-time $10,000 deductible across the whole portfolio. So it saved us quite a bit of dollars. And I think I could say the same thing on the RAD side as well. I think we were fortunate to do that. So we were able to recoup almost all of the losses of monies, and those repairs are still ongoing, but we're getting near completion now. And so we're very pleased, and we've managed COVID very well as well on our portfolios. We don't have any active cases that I can speak of, that I know of. Things are going pretty well on our front. So I just thought I'd give you that little brief update, and we look forward to bringing you the three deals that you just heard the public hearings on at the June board meeting.
Commissioners, any questions for Ron?
Ron, I do have a question. As we look at yet one more transaction with LDG, did we ever get a report that Berman Hopkins was doing and taking a look at capabilities, financial obligations, guarantees from about LDG?
Yeah, and Mr. Gurry, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we would probably be sharing with that to you over the next few weeks prior to the June board meeting. We got a pretty good detailed report that was a pretty positive, I would say. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're in pretty good shape on that front.
Yeah, I would like, Commissioner Carrington, in your respective role with AAC, I'd like for you and Mr. Kowal to have an informal briefing with Berman Hopkins just to walk through the nits of their analysis. But I think in general, it was a solid A. There are always areas that people can improve on, but on all of the major indicators that we were looking at, I think they felt like I think we all felt, quite good in the initial readout, and that they did have the wherewithal, given all that we were, all the work that we were doing in collaboration with them. So, Ron, can we schedule that before, say, in the first week of June?
Absolutely.
Work with Mr. Carrington's schedule, and maybe if there's one other board member who would be interested in that, and then we can report that. There is some delicate financial data in there. It's not entirely non-disclosable, but I think in with respect to our partnership, I think we'd like to keep it more limited. And so if we get two board members, but certainly Edwina certainly would want you to be part of that.
Mike, this is Chuck. I gotta go.
Okay.
Good luck, Chuck.
We're driving up I-35. I always need it. We're going that way. Either Mike or Wilson, would y'all give me a call? Let me know what y'all decide in the executive session.
Yes, sir. Do you want to go? I think we probably knocked the executive session out in about six or seven minutes if we wanted to jump into that right now.
We can do it.
I got
three.
I think I know what you know, but just all right. Well, let's go ahead and if we can do that right quick. Carl, have you got time?
All right. Yeah, I got time.
Yes. So at this time, we're going to go into executive session. If we can have members of the public go ahead and drop off, and staff as well can go ahead and peel off. Obviously, Wilson, you'll stay on. So, Barbara, Suzanne, everyone, Gloria, you can go ahead and drop off. Andrea, if you can help out with that
for a second.
All right, so we are recessing into executive session pursuant to Texas Government Code 55.
0.071 to consult with legal counsel, 551.072, 551.074, and 551.087 of the Texas Government Code to consult with counsel.
We are returning to the public portion of the meeting. Executive session has been completed. And Chairman Ritchie, at this time, do you have any statements?
Yes.
Regard to the executive session.
Yeah. So the board of commissioners met in executive session. We did discuss an opportunity that has been presented to Mr. Gerber, and I will read for you a statement on behalf of the board regarding this potential opportunity. During the executive session, the board was advised that Mr. Gerber potentially has the opportunity to assume an interim leadership position with a national association of which Hawk is a longstanding member. The board understands that this interim leadership position will be temporary. Mr. Gerber understands the importance of ensuring that there is a clear separation between his responsibilities to HACA and other duties, and that his obligation as CEO of HACA takes priority. Specifically, Mr. Gerber will ensure that there is a complete separation of funds and that the National Association will retain appropriate insurance coverages for the time in which Mr. Gerber is performing work for them. In addition, Mr. Gerber understands the importance of avoiding any potential conflicts of interest. Should one arise, he will advise the HACA board immediately. If the matter cannot be resolved, Mr. Gerber will resign from his work with the National Association. Mr. Gerber understands that HACA and our commitments to our residents and families remain his highest priority, and he will ensure that the duties of his position as HACA CEO continue to be effectively met. With these understandings, the board approves Mr. Gerber taking on an interim leadership position with the National Association for a period not to extend past December 31st, 2021. Additionally, the board would like to let everyone know that we're doing this in consultation with our legal counsel, and we will also consult with our audit firm to make sure that there is a complete segregation of funds related to compensation and benefits for Mr. Gerber with the National Association, as well as his benefits and compensation with HACA. And with that, I welcome any of my colleagues to make a comment at this time. And so, Wilson, do we need to take a vote?
No, we haven't taken any action. I don't believe we need a vote.
Okay. So I invite my colleagues to have a comment at this time. Just no one wants to say anything then. With that, are there any other matters that need to come before the HACA board at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think we've covered all of them.
What I will say is thanks, and I will entertain them.
Have we covered all the agenda items?
Yes, ma'am, we've covered everything.
Yes, everything's been covered.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Okay. I shall move.
I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 We are officially adjourned at 2:17 p.m. on Thursday, May 20th.